Blog Talk Radio.
Like tempered steel, glowing red, the bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on, we're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or called in. Your writing is what we are here for.
Good evening, good evening. Hope all is well out there. We have another great night of poetry here on the Double Helix. I am one of your two hosts, Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. With me is Aphasiana. How are you, Aphasiana?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, like I said, it's just getting a little bit warmer around here, so it's always easier when the season starts changing a little bit, getting into more spring weather, so looking forward to summer. We have a lot of great poems. It looks like we had quite a few writes for the contest that you had posted. Why don't you share a little bit about the contest?
Okay, so I saw this painting online. It's by Alireza Karimi Maghadam, and it is a picture of a man painting a painting of sunflowers within a gray, drab, destroyed city or village. Everything's fallen apart. There's wood and stones in the street. It looks war-torn, and the sky is stormy. So there's this man painting a beautiful, sunny, happy painting amongst the wreckage. And with it came the quote by Leonard Bernstein, "This will be our reply to violence, to make music more intensely, more beautifully, more devoutly than ever before." So this isn't about a specific war, even though I know that painting was a specific reference to what's going on in Ukraine. My contest isn't about that specific issue. It's about how you yourselves have dealt with difficult situations and tried to find beauty in them or turn that pain into art. So that was the contest.
And
thank you. We had some wonderful entries that you'll get to hear tonight.
Awesome. I'm excited about it and looking forward to it. So, you know, I don't know, with no further ado, I think we should probably get right into it.
I agree. All right. I posted one by Daniel Duhame. Would you read that for us, please, Dex?
Absolutely. This is by Daniel Duhame. This is The Vial of Hatred. Hate is the vial that stains the soul with darkness, consuming it with fear, wearing away at the mind of in confusion. Only the Buddhists understand the concept of transcendental souls through the power of meditation. Disciples of false gods weave a tale of envy that grows exponentially into the passions to destroy the fabric of normal tendencies. Putting aside evil intent helps with growth of the soul, releasing stress, calming mind and body at once. End poem. Why don't you start with comments on this one, Afasiana?
Sure. I really like the last stanza. Putting aside evil intent helps with growth of the soul, releasing stress, calming mind and body all at once. So even in the face of being treated with evil intent, it seems, where there's that negativity, if you can put aside those grudges, it helps yourself too. I think this is about how sometimes forgiveness isn't really about, necessarily how it affects the person, but by letting it go, you're saving yourself as well, because that anger can be like a poison within yourself. So to release the stress and be calmer in your mind and your body, like it says, sometimes choosing not to give in to the hatred, that whole eye for an eye kind of mentality, and just trying to find some peace. So I love the way that wrapped up. I thought it was a good ending that suited the contest.
Great comment. Yeah, I liked the opening stanza. I think was probably my favorite. The hate is a vial that stains the soul with darkness, consuming it with fear, wearing away at the mind in confusion. Hatred is kind of a poison, you know. in our body, and it can work on the mind in such ways that is just so negative. And so to be able to master your body and your soul and the power through the power of meditation is something that is an absolute skill and an important instrument, from what I hear, to those that do. So very well written, for kind of a brevity, but it packed a lot of feeling throughout. So very well done. And where are we heading to next, Ephesia?
So we have another Daniel. It's funny. The first one was Daniel Duhame, and this is Daniel Deschino. So the two DDs. here we go.
That
this
is,
is Dahlia. It was a funny coincidence. I didn't try to do that. Dahlia Amongst Devastation by Daniel Deschino. Love is the flowers of the world. Lavender and jasmine fields to comfort and blanket lost battleground burials. Edelweiss to dwarf the beauty of mountainous majesty. Marigolds amongst the desert death, as soft, tender hope defying the endless, unemotional sand. The true sign of spring, rebirth, hope, life. A sensual song from visual vocals. What is love? But the rose petal touch of her soft, healing hands. The belladonna scent of her hair in a midnight breeze. The strawberry taste of her lips from a kiss that brings the night, timeless till the morning's light. It is the surviving ember that reignites as the clouds part. Love is the flame immortal, a fearless phoenix. The only thing, the one thing, even death cannot conquer. So take what you will of me, and I will watch you buried. From an avalanche of your own raging greed. And I will stand tall and free, a king among kings, with a treasure within heart, nurtured from the garden of what love is. End poem.
Fantastic read, Aphasiana, and great write by Daniel. Love is the flowers of the world. Lavender and jasmine fields to comfort and blanket lost battleground burials. You know, it is just kind of that. Love is that thing that can conquer, and it can, you know, and does, you know, beat the dark. You know, that is the thing about the light that does live through the night, and it does reignite, you know, as the clouds part, as he put it. You know, it's a very touching poem, and it's very fitting for, being what's needed in the world right now. So I thought that this was a very well written piece and, very warm, bit of writing. So very well done by Daniel. Ephesiana, what did you think about it?
I think it works so well with the prompt because it takes so many aspects of the prompt. Think about how the painting that the man is doing within the painting is the flowers, and those flowers represent the love and hope that still remains after the devastation. So Daniel starts off with flowers and how beautiful they are and how they are resilient amongst difficult places. The burial grounds that grow certain types of flowers, the things that can survive on mountains, the things that can survive in the desert. These plants overcome impossible odds where they have very little opportunity for nurturing, and still they're beautiful. And I feel like that fits so well with this, where sometimes, you know, there's a difficult, horrible situation that people are in, and yet beauty somehow peeks through, and they are resilient. And then he gets into that sensual part where he's talking about the rose petal touch, which is so soft and smooth, the strawberry taste of her lips. Like, that part was just absolutely beautiful and sensual. And then it gets into the defiance, which is kind of like the spirit of the contest, of even if you get attacked, even if someone takes everything from him, if they hurt him, if they kill him, he will still be there and have had a good life because he had love, and hang on to that to the very end, even if he has nothing else, because that's one thing that even death cannot conquer. There's just such like defiance in that. I like that he said, "I will stand tall and free," because it's just like in that power stance, like despite the fact that everything is crumbling in the world, I'm still going to be here and be okay because I believe in love. I think that's absolutely beautiful. This is an inspiring poem.
Comment, Aphasiana. And why don't you take us to the next one here?
All right. So this is by Blatant B. And can you please read that one, Dex?
Yeah. This is Tin Men by Blatant B. Their faces sure does look real, but when you touch them, they have a metallic feel. Cold exterior, dead smile, walking towards you, single file, bleeding the red carpet, marching down the aisle. Every step is a frightening bang, marching forward, last songs are sang. Silent tears fall masked by banging as their heads hang, bang, bang, bang. Half mast, the flag hang, and the bell is rang. Our bodies shiver, we are terrified. Bang, 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 they're coming. Hold tightly onto my hand. We need to run. I know your legs are tired, but we need to run. Metallic shells, big and small, hang in the sky. Soon they'll be raining down. Some of us wonder, what have we done wrong? But there's no time for answer. Bang, 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 they're in front of us. We are quite sure that inside of these tin men should be a brain, or a chip controlling them, like a brain that is connected to a conscience telling them this is wrong, but they keep coming, knowing they can stop. End poem. Faziana, why don't we start with comments on you, or with you?
Wow. This just like gives me chills, that fear of seeing this in the sky. The idea of the metallic shells hanging in the sky, coming down. I really like the part that wishes that these bombs and all of the weapons had a conscience, could choose to stop. And that really makes us think about the people who are choosing to use them, the people who are, pressing the button to make the bomb come, or shooting the bullets, or ordering the people to do so. So the weapons themselves don't have that conscience, but wouldn't it be wonderful if all humanity did and weren't willing to do this to other people. The idea of the bullets raining down just is so intense. The shivering brings to life that terror. Where is it? Silent tears fall masked by banging. Like the noise makes it so you can't even hear the cries amongst the people. It's just, it's so intense. Their face sure does look real, but when you touch them, they have a metallic feel. Cold exterior, dead smile, walking towards you. So the idea of that kind of robotic nature of soldiers sometimes when they're in the kind of the zone, because I mean people are taught to depersonify them, to see the enemy as less than human, as a way, as like a coping mechanism for getting the job done. And there is that kind of robotic feel to it of detachment. Not to say all soldiers are like that, of course, but there is just this coldness to it, and I think he captures that so well. Bleeding the red carpet, having that path for them to go down, to think of the red carpet being the blood of the people. That is just, it's so intense. I'm lost in a circle of thought. What did you think, Dexter?
Yeah, I think it's dehumanized, but I thought that this was a very good write. I liked the pace of it. You know, the pace matched very well as far as when talking about marching down the aisle, walking towards you. It had a very like almost futuristic. I mean, it's like post-apocalyptic. Obviously, that's happening right now in Ukraine, and people probably can't believe it. But it's just like, you know, just calling them the Tin Man. You know, just these soulless characters that are marching. You know, and I just thought that the pace of the writing and the repetitiveness of the bang, bang, bang. You know, it was almost like acting as, you know, the reader being even shell-shocked from the entire thing. I just thought that this was very well done and very skillfully crafted by Blayton B. So on to the next write that we have here.
Okay. This next poem is by Jared A. Harris. It's called Wrath of Misled Genius. Asked if it were for the cult of color, would hoods acknowledge your name? Outcast with his poor, immature tumult, because others misunderstood logic, swore changed. Slang of now and again speak of harlot's shamed steps into life. Strange because allowed man to deepen each drugged starlit fame kept advice. Strife measures. Leave words to grow as the heat of night begs for pain. Christ fetters deceive herds through blow has the sheep invite dead score gained. Broken slurs dictate what is even more proud of growing. Devotion stirs faith in muck, believing mature crowd is above showing. Hell's relic testified of hard living and reason to mend a severed heart. Failed Celtic gentrified was the yard Christian stand bleeding true when praise go together with smart. End poem.
Great great read of Faziana, and very good write by Jared. Very abstract, right? Kind of like what I remember as far as his typical style, which is one that take a few reads, I think, to fully grasp the depth of each line that he used, that he writes. I think that on this, though, you know, he's talking about quite a bit in here. I think he's talking about quite a bit about our, who we put our, value on whose opinions, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, you're watching CNN and it's like, well, let's hear what, Lindsay Lohan has to think about Ukraine, or, you know what I mean? And it's like, well, what the fuck? what the hell is this about, you know, or like, let's see what this person at, you know, and these are, you know, where we put our beliefs, and this is where we put our guidance, you know, and also too, and just this, the, you know, the religion and all of these different things. I think that he kind of ties in here of this broken system that we have of following the lost. So I thought that this was a very well-written piece and very well done. Faziana, what did you think about it?
I think it's really intelligent, and it is abstract and intricately worded, so it is something that I would need to read a few times to fully grasp. But I liked how he said the slang of now, and it's talking about how, you know, war is talked about in different ways in different times, and how World War One was reported on compared to World War Two compared to current wars shifts based on perspectives and based on, like, the type of media we have. And like you said, like, they're asking celebrities their opinion on things because that's what people pay attention to. And it's maybe bringing awareness to people who don't watch the news, like the real news, or read about the more serious issues. If they only look at kind of celebrity gossip, then the celebrities talking about it is the way that attention gets. But at the same time, like, they are not experts on anything necessarily. So, like you said, it's not really the best way. But the slang of now, I mean, like, I can't remember what company it was. It might have been Twitter. So, like, one of the social media things, like, left Russia. Like, we're no longer involved. And it's like then the talk on there is very different because everyone's short forms to be able to fit the format of Twitter. So, like, the slang of now and the formats of now shape the discussions of things, and that shapes the way that things go. I like, where is it? Devotion stirs faith in muck, believing mature crowd is above showing. So no matter what the cause or the religion or, like, whatever it is, sometimes the faith in muck, it doesn't matter what it is, if you're determined that this is the right thing and you have it entrenched in you, then you think that you're above falling for things because this is, like, the right way. And, you know, everyone thinks that their way is the right way, and somebody has to be wrong if there's such opposing views. So I'm not saying that I know what's right or wrong necessarily, but I think that it's interesting how he puts that, stirs faith in muck. This is really interesting, and Jared has a way of making me want to read it over and over again to try to see if there's anything I'm missing. Like, when he first talked about the cult of color, would hoods acknowledge your name, it made me think about, like, the KKK and their hoods, but they would not be the cult of color because they're actually kind of, well, they are against color, or people of color. So I think that's a really interesting first line because I'm not totally sure now which hoods he's referring to. At the beginning, I thought it was that. But in either case, I think it might refer to something like that, like a call out on racism. So interesting piece, Jared. You always leave us questioning things, and I appreciate things that make me think.
You know, like I said, there's a lot of ways you could almost take that. You know, there's been talk about, you know, once black celebrities do get on top, are they just falling in line with what's being told to them to say rather than and kind of standing up. So maybe the call through the hoods acknowledge your name. It's almost somewhat, I guess, almost towards it, almost like a kind of an Illuminati thing, or like, you know, Nick Cannon was told, you know, he shouldn't say that about Jewish people or something like that, and he's on there apologizing, and now he's all over TV. That kind of thing, I think, is kind of what he's referring to. I could be wrong, though, but...
It could be. Yeah, good observation.
All right, and where are we heading to next year?
There's one by Rob Azza, and I think it's your turn to read.
Okay, this is Rob Azza, and this one is called Instruments of Love. Let fly the tanks, the flaming missiles. I will present my bow and strings, then play you a sonnet. Rain down from the sky a million deadly cries, and I will take to my bass and thump you with love. Bog down our minds with worry and concern, and we'll feed our anxieties with bushels of burnt page books. Burn our homes with lies, with forced embers, with oozing darkness, and we will fight with truth bombs instead. Smash in our noses, our minds, our hearts with so wicked, and we will hold you like a baby lost at war, like a babe lost at war, and wipe at your bottom so crusted with filth. Gray skies, and rejoice in our resilience and might, and believe in love, not hate, or war, or theft. Look to the skies, then look to the eyes of the children, lost, transfixed on the horror on their mother's necks, their father's gone to fight, and think of the sun beyond the charcoal clouds, and listen for Bach playing your favorite songs as you lob bombs at our instruments of love. End poem. Wow, fantastic, right, Rob? I thought that this one captured it very well. I'm going to let Faziana comment on it first.
This gave me goosebumps. I think this is brilliant. I would say with confidence this is going to get one of the medals. I haven't decided the order of things, but just listening to this, I'm wowed by it. I really liked how he used bows and strings, because it could be a bow and arrow at first that he's going to fight with, but then you think about how with the bow and the strings, you could also be playing something like a cello, or I don't know, I'm terrible with instruments, but some kind of string instrument where you have a bow, like a violin, I think. So it works on two levels. It could be a weapon, but instead you're choosing to play the music. I thought that was a really clever beginning. And then to take the bass and thump you with love, instead of thumping as in a violent way, to give the love, that's the message that we're trying to do with this. And feed our anxieties with bushels of burnt page books. Now that terrifies me. For those of you who don't know, I'm a librarian, and I'm very much like freedom of access to books, freedom to read. The idea of burning books just absolutely horrifies me. Not at all to bring down the seriousness of the people who are being attacked. Of course, I prioritize the people, but the idea of burning books really upsets me, and I know that libraries are under attack, and people's rights to read are under attack, because it's censorship, but also destruction of culture, and not just in the war-torn zones. I mean, like, in the U.S. right now, there's a lot of burning books happening. It's baffling to me. But it's also a big concern in Ukraine right now, where they're their culture is getting destroyed. I think that this is a really important part to include, and how that does feed our anxiety. And then he gets into using truth bombs instead, and I think that's connected, where you know, as much as they try to burn the information to get rid of our resources to have stories and learning and news that is accurate, to hit them with truth is such a powerful thing. I didn't have a chance to catch up on all the news, but I know that there was a hack in the last couple of days where into the stations that had only been playing certain propaganda, they got news from other places in the world and saw other perspectives thrown at them. So truth bombs instead of real bombs intrigues me. But I don't know the details of that, so I won't comment exactly, except that I like the concept of truth bombs. I really liked the way that it talked about the gray skies, because that's in the painting, and it also is metaphorical often of you know, difficult times. Even though I personally love the rain, it usually is seen as a negative thing when the sky is gray, and then here we are still hoping for love amongst this. Then the part with the children is what really hit me. They are my weakness. So to look in the eyes of the children, transfixed on the horror, and, you know, that's the thing that has really been breaking my heart in all of the articles and the pictures that I've seen. These poor children are innocent, and you know, children on both sides, and there's such danger to them, and civilian places are getting hit, and it's just, it killed me to see the kids. So to think about how they have to see their parents go through this difficulty, and their siblings, but they're still thinking of the sun beyond the charcoal clouds, and listen to the Bach playing, And they talk about how lobbing bombs at the instruments of love, and that makes me think about how there was what was it? There was like a theater that was attacked, and all works on a metaphorical level too. Like, it doesn't have to be actual bombs, although the horror is that actually are bombs happening. The concept of like people trying to bring you down, and you will have music to handle it, that you will express yourself in positive ways. So this is just an incredible poem, Rob. I really enjoyed it.
I agree. I thought he captured it very well with what you were kind of looking for as far as in the prompt, and you know, resilience and might and believe in love and not war, hate and war, theft. You know, and when you said the truth bombs and stuff too, like you said, you know, when you were talking about the propaganda and stuff, I mean, I was thinking about that reporter in Russia that is looking at getting possibly 15 years in prison for holding up that sign saying that they're lying to you. It was in Russia, saying that they're lying to you and this is propaganda from this network. And now she's looking at getting possibly 15 years in prison for that. But yeah, this one really hit the nail on the head. I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought you said your comment was awesome as far as the look in the kids' eyes and everything. I thought you hit the comment very well of this. And I thought that, this was just a brilliant piece and a brilliant write. So very well done, Rob. Okay, next up, it looks like you have posted one by Incubus.
Yes, this is Incubus 2, and the poem is called Dust Daisies. Ashen faces smiling as a single daisy brings a little sunshine into their darkness. undeterred by the heavy leaden boot of angry men whom fail to see the beauty in the mediocre. Children laughing, pulling petals to wear as a badge of honor upon their dirty faces. A petal teardrop, a semi-permanent tattoo. As hands joined, they dance. A ring of roses around this symbol of unrestrained champion of freedom. Tears of joy washing away the pain as each splash in ash brings forth another and another until the cracked, corrupted concrete no more, as now awash with the flow of fragrant flags that in silent voices doth declare, we will all rise again. End poem.
Great read, Faziana, and great write, Incubus. Yeah, I thought that this was another great write. I thought that what this captured very well was just the idea of, you know, what war and what all of these things steal from us, the darkness steals from us, and angry men in leaden boots steals from us is just the simple act of kids playing and just these, you know, the simple things that are just everyday parts of our lives that actually are kind of the symbol of freedom in those moments. And when you're looking around at just total devastation and all of these things, maybe you're fleed to another country, you're thinking about your home, your parents and things like that. It's stolen the smiles away from so many people. And just those everyday pieces of life that are kind of taken for granted for the time being are kind of are washed away, you know, but tears of joy washing away the pain. This is a very optimistic write nonetheless, because it's optimistic that the people and the good times will rise again. At least that was my interpretation of it. What did you think of Faziana?
I think your interpretation is exactly right. That's how I saw it as well. You know, it's those little beautiful moments of childhood that are being lost and that there is hope for regaining. I liked the whom fail to see the beauty in the mediocre. And that's the thing is, you know, people overlook those little tiny moments of beauty, of the child who finds the flower and is so excited about that. I met a little boy today. He was about three, and he had never really gone out anywhere because, you know, COVID baby. He spent his whole life in isolation. So it was his first time, like, going to a public place, and he was such a little sweetheart. He was so excited about everything. He came into my library where I was working, and he came to my story time. So I read to him, and, you know, we played with little puppets and things. And he was so thrilled about absolutely everything. He was just like, blue! And whenever he found, like, something that was a certain color, or, like, cat! And, like, he just, like, every single thing he saw, he was so happy about. And that's something that, like, adults don't appreciate. Like, you know, you'd walk through that room and you wouldn't even notice anything. But he saw all the little things that other people might think are mediocre, and they were special to him. And children have that where they're like, you know, a park, which the soldiers might march through and not think anything of, is like a magical place for these kids. And they are like a simple thing, like a swing or a slide. So those children who may not realize the seriousness of things are still laughing and playing with the flowers, and then something awful might happen, and then they have that teardrop. And the way that it talks about the dirty faces and the petal teardrop, it just, I can imagine the tears staining the ash and the mud, and just, oh, it's such a vibrant, like, bold image. So this is a poem that really brings it to life, and I'm happy that it leads on a positive note. And also I enjoy alliteration, so cracked, corrupted concrete sounds good, but then to say no more as now awash, it's like it's not going to be cracked, corrupted, and it's not just going to be that darkness anymore. We're going to get back to the colorful beauty of things. This really captures the spirit of the painting and the quote. And, I appreciate this. Thank you, Incubus, too, for sharing.
Here we go. And where are we heading to next, Faziana?
We have one by Stephen T. Wellman. I know he's one of your favorites, so I'm going to let you read this one.
Yep, perfect. This is called In Touch by Stephen T. Wellman. Say what you will. My words bleed a portrait of me. So what? I wear my heart on my sleeve. I don't hide behind arrogance, hate, and humor and hate. It must be tough not being in touch with who you are. Not getting to know who you are. Writing is my passion. It's healing. It's poetry. Poetry is emotion. It is feeling. It is a dying art, or in today's culture politically incorrect, to express yourself, your true self. If we took the time to observe more, to reflect more, to journal more, we'd have musical harmony. We would be in tune with ourselves, window to the soul, open and unshaded. We would make an effort to understand. Love completely without complete understanding. No limits, no conditions. Real, unconditional love. We are all broken, a jagged part of the whole. Imperfect pieces. A crimson-colored sunrise. Cluttered clouds. Brilliantly beautiful. When we all come together. End poem. Another fantastic write, Stephen. Faziana, why don't you start with comments on this?
I really enjoyed this. And it feels like a very personal write, which I enjoy, because he is someone who, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve in his poetry. I've read many from him, and he, you know, puts it all out there, seemingly uncensored, like, this is my pain. This is my life, and I love that about his poetry. I really appreciate things that are, you know, raw feeling, unfiltered, and I feel like that's something he's good at. So I like that he recognizes that, and I like the part that says, it must be tough not being in touch with who you are, not getting to know who you are, because there is kind of this expectation from some people that, you know, you don't overshare in your poetry, that you have to hold back and that you can't really delve into it. I've had people say, like, why are you so negative in that poem? Or, like, they're like, they want you to be happy all the time. And the thing is, like he says, poetry is emotion. It can be healing, and for it to be properly healing, you have to put it out there as it really is. I think it is kind of a dying art in some ways, but it also is having a bit of a revival at the same time. I think that for a while, it was cool to, like, be apathetic, and now it's more of a feel things. Empathy is more encouraged. So it comes and goes, it seems, in waves of if you're encouraged to feel and be open. And I think that his dedication to give into those feelings, to be true to himself, is really nice. And the idea of being in tune with ourselves is great. I also really liked A Crimson Colored Sunrise, Cluttered Clouds, Brilliantly Beautiful when we All Come Together. Because an individual cloud during a sunrise is maybe not that impressive. But when you see how all the different shades of the colors come together, how the different shapes interact with each other, it becomes beautiful in that diversity of colors and shapes, and the idea that different personalities can come together and create a beautiful scene. I don't know. I think that was really nice. So well done, Stephen.
Great comment, Faziana. Yeah, I agree. You know, I enjoy the fact that he's willing to wear his heart on his sleeve, to observe more, to reflect more, to journal more, would be musical harmony. I think that the best line, in my opinion, is if it was love completely without complete understanding. You know, I think that that's kind of what love is. It's almost having, it's love is in a way of faith. And, in a faith, you know, you don't have to have a total understanding of it, or like, you know, I think that's kind of having faith in it, is that you're relying on that. You're relying on that to have the answers. You know, if you needed to have all of the answers for it, I don't necessarily know if you would love it, you know? You'd be questioning it, or, you know, so I think that it's a very strong line. This is another very strong piece, and I think that what you said about the clouds was a great comment, because it was one that I kind of missed thinking about the other previous lines. So great write, Stephen, and very well done. Where are we heading to next, Faziana?
We have an audio recording from Weaver of Dreams.
Awesome.
Okay. I thought that everyone had a space like mine, in a dark, cold world where they could go. It can be all things to all people, a tiny golden sphere or a blazing, engulfing, towering inferno. When the night is endless, cold and cheerless, I open that inner door, bask in the light. I am the child I used to be, with a wild wonder and a belief in all that is good and right.
Great piece, great, and thank you very much, Weaver of Dreams, for sending in the audio. I thought it was that much more powerful just to be able to hear it in your voice. So this is a beautiful brevity that definitely packs a punch for the short amount of words. And, you know, this is, you know, I don't mean to be almost like cliche or something, but this is almost like a, reminded me almost like of Peter Pan or something. This is just that endless, eternal, inside, youthful warmth and light that I believe that is accessed through writing. And every time that the world is so cold, you know, Weaver of Dreams is able to access that inner light, you know, and a lot of times too, this is a sign kind of too also of introverts. You know, introverts, when they're with themselves, recharge, and then the world drains them versus the opposite around, you know, way. And so I kind of take this as writing, but I think that this could also be almost kind of taken as, you know, an introvert kind of retracting from the world and being able to let their mind wander and really kind of allow that warmth inside them to recharge. I just thought that this was a very well-written brevity, and the SoundCloud was great. So, Faziana, what did you think?
I thought it was beautiful. Her SoundCloud was wonderful. I love when people give us SoundClouds. She has such a lovely reading voice. I like the first line, I thought everyone had a space like mine, because sometimes we don't realize that the way we think is unusual. To have, like, that happy place in your mind, that compartmentalized that you go to, and then to realize that maybe not everyone has that. I had a therapist once. Yes, I've been in a lot of therapy. One of my therapists said that if you should have, like, three or four happy places that you imagine, like, places that you should have one that was a real thing in your past. You should have one where you wish you were now, and there was one that you would like to think that could happen in the future. And then you imagine yourself going into an elevator. Whenever there's something bad happening that you need to get away mentally for a few minutes, you picture yourself getting in the elevator, and you press 1, 2, or 3, and you pick one of those things, and you go, and you're in that place just for a little while to calm yourself and be ready to face whatever's really happening. And this makes me think of that she has that space, that thing that your elevator opens up to. And she has that happy place. And I like that she says it could be all things to all people, because it's sort of like in Harry Potter, the Room of Requirement, where that magical room becomes whatever you need it to be. And different people need different things to find comfort. A tiny golden sphere could be just a little thing, a small moment that you remember. You know, like someone else was saying in their poem, like just the child picking the flower and a beautiful moment that other people might not notice. Or it could be a blazing, engulfing, towering inferno. It could be something that is like a big dramatic thing, like, you know, you have your own island and like all of these things. It depends on the person and what they're trying to do to find that peace. But I think that the way that she says that is so wonderful. And again, with the alliteration, with a wild wonder, I love W words. So this is just beautiful. And that idea of recapturing your childhood, I like that you referred to it as a Peter Pan thing, because that holding on to the youthful spirit, I'll never grow up kind of mentality. Sometimes you need that. And I think this is beautiful. The last line, a belief in all that is good and right. The belief doesn't necessarily have to be related to a specific, religion or belief system. It can just be thinking that there is good in the world and to focus on that. I think this is wonderful and a good response to the contest.
Great comment, Faziana. And I believe you're up next on the read.
I think you're right. All right. So the next one is by Pink Fairy 5. Here we go. She Turns a Room Every Time by Pink Fairy 5. Hostility and anger was zooming around the room when she arrived. She sat in the corner, writing poetry, creating a pretty world of her own. The hostess came by to take a peek and ended up with a smile. She patted her shoulder and said, "I am so glad that you came." The angriest fellow in the room, with a permanent frown, sat next. He wanted to see what she was writing. It touched him, and he softened. He began to cry, letting out tears he had held for most of his life. She ended up patting him on the shoulder. Her husband watched without comment. She was an empath, bringing people joy in quiet ways. She had an understanding of psychology that consternated others. By the time dinner was served, 3 wanted to sit next to her. He watched them change name tags around, each trying to get a seat. His wife was a compassionate listener. She could turn a room. She had seen this for, he had seen this for most of his life. They were in their 60s. It had been happening since she was 16 when they met. He winked at her from the other side of the long table. There was laughter. There was hope. There was joy. She had them frolicking like fairies by midnight, and without alcoholic beverages or a witch's spell, too. And Paul.
Great read of Faziana and great write, Pink Fairy. She's a fantastic storyteller whenever she chooses to, and it seems like she does quite often, and it's just fantastic the way that she does. When the little mix in the way that she spelled fairies and things like that, I just have a feeling that, that this is like a little bit about by her, the way that she writes too. She seems like she would be just a person that would be very, like she almost has like a gravitational pull. She has such an interesting way of writing, and it's such so entertaining. I can see people wanting to sit next to him. But what a fantastic relationship that she describes here. It's not a jealous thing in the husband. It's just the husband can recognize that people like to sit next to her. And instead of looking at the doom and the gloom, he recognizes her for being kind of the social butterfly or the flower that she is. And he loves, or, you know, I kind of just take this as he loves watching her interact and be kind of in her natural zone, or just her natural spot, you know, where she belongs. And it's just interacting with others and things like that. So I just thought that this was a fantastic write and very well done as far as the storytelling, I think, very. What did you think of Faziana?
I agree with you that I think she is the woman in this story, or that she's a lot like that. She has that kind of glow about her that I imagine when I read her poems, where she would be that person who warms up a cold party, where there might be some hostility and she just melts it with her presence. I can also imagine her sitting in the corner writing while everything's going on. And, you know, some people, like myself, would be considered antisocial for doing that and, like, have kind of an air around them where people are kind of afraid to approach. Not that I'm scary, but, like, you know, it has that kind of sense that, like, oh, that person doesn't want to be a part of things. But not with her. Like, they see her writing and they're curious and they want to approach her. So I think that is a special kind of person who is approachable even when they're off in their own little world. And she just has this magnetism that you see here where everyone wants to sit with her. And I like what you said about the husband. He's not jealous that people want to be close to her. He's not upset that he doesn't get to be the one sitting beside her. He just appreciates what the effect that she has on people, and he understands why they're drawn to her. I think that's wonderful. I went to see an author a while ago do a presentation, and it was kind of about being a positive influence on children because she writes children's books, and she said that some people are cookie people. And what she meant by that was, you know, when you have a cookie that's fresh out of the oven and you have that warmth in your belly and you have a little bit of a sugar rush and it feels like a wonderful kind of comfort food where you just have this wonderful sweetness. And some people, just being near them, it's like having a warm homemade cookie, they're just magical. Even if you don't know them that well, just being around them feels really good. And I have known a couple people like that where I now think of it the way that she said it. They're cookie people. And this person in this poem is a cookie person. I love it.
I agree. What we have up next here is we have a piece by G.A. Grimm, and I'll give that a read. It's called A Single Light. Be not afraid of the darkness or the ones who spread it, for they fear the light with every gentle word, every embrace shared, each act of kindness done. We create a spark. Let us make a promise, one human to another. I pledge to shine for you, so shine for me. And let us illuminate this world, a single light at a time. And hope is, and down here it says, hope is not much like a lonely star at night, mostly surrounded by darkness, but it is enough to guide you by the light, end quote, by G.A. Grimm. End poem.
Sorry, I was lost in the poem. It was a great read, Dex, and I like this poem. I like that it talks about how every gentle word, every embrace, every act of kindness, all of the positive small things that you do create a spark, that light, something not only for yourself but for others. It gives that little bit of hope when people see you doing a gentle thing, it lights it for the person who you are being kind to, but also for the people who experience it like secondhand. This creating that light is wonderful, and I like how it addresses the reader as if they're talking to someone in particular. I pledge to shine for you, so shine for me. And let us illuminate this world a single light at a time. I really love that. It's like the pay it forward kind of feeling of one act of kindness ends up leading to another act of kindness, and it just spreads, and then all those little tiny lights end up making it bright for everyone. I think it's such a beautiful message, and it's worded in a nice way. What did you think, Dexter?
Yeah, I agree. You know, we owe it to, you know, to each other to act, you know, in the kindness. And like you said, all of these kind acts can shine the light under the darkness. Be not afraid of the darkness or the ones who spread it, for they fear the light. And there's a lot of truth to that, because, you know, I think that these people are running from something in their past, you know, are running from something, you know, that a lot of the darkness comes from self-guilt and from things that they know aren't right, or that maybe have been done to them, or that they've done to other people. And so there's just this internal darkness that they have that is spreading. It's a fear of the light. And so the people that are light, though, shouldn't be the ones that are fearing the darkness, because they can light it up themselves. So I thought that this was a very well-written brevity and right on par for the poems that or the prompt that you called for. So very well done by G.A. Grimm. Okay, next I'm going to post one for you by Beth.
Okay. This is by Beth888. One only has to look up. One only has to look up these days to notice the absence of eye bathing blue, pure as an infant's stare. I see only lattice patterns of dingy, white smog elementally infused. On the streets, people cover their faces and gaze downward. No collective acknowledgement of who brought this on. If we lower our gaze, will the damage fade into our short-term memory? Let's face the demon head on. I cross uninventive bridges, gray and unappealing, to satisfy a need to play, to plant new responses to the collective sowing, to collaborate in sound and color, to scat a language of the living. Only we can speak when in imagination we come together. And I know some of those cries, like Icarus soar and burn through the stagnation we make when our lesser minds try to stem the recurring cycles of nature. There is only dancing, as though hot coals paved the way for an answer no one, even in their right mind, could have ever anticipated. End poem. This was fun. I liked the reference to Icarus, who went too close to the sun and burned up. That myth reference of, you know, sometimes when you have big ideas, you go too far and you get hurt. But to dance as though you're over hot coals, again, the process can be painful, but you might get to something beautiful. To find inspiration, sometimes you have to step away from the safe bridge that is drab and go through a more difficult landscape to be able to sow new opportunities. Now, scat, if I'm correct, is like poop, animal poop. So to scat a language of the living. So it's like to let's. You know what? I lost my train of thought there. I had an idea about that word choice, and I've lost it. Duke, what did you think?
All right. You know, so with this piece, obviously it has a lot to do with COVID and the current things, you know. On the streets, people cover their faces and gaze downward, no collecting acknowledgement of who brought this on. If we lower our gaze, will the damage fade into our short-term memory? Let's face the demons head on. It's just kind of, I feel like, just talking about how we've all kind of isolation has kind of brought on this idea of, or this kind of collective feeling of just, you know, I don't want to get it, or hopefully me, or rather than all of us, you know. I'm just hoping that I don't get it. And, you know, if I get this, or, you know, and it's like, I feel like this person is talking about, we need to reconnect and bring back conversation and, you know, saying hi to each other, all these kinds of small things that have just been kind of lost by the wayside because of all of these COVID and things. So I just thought that this was a very well-written piece. Okay.
Next, that was some good observations.
We have Meds by Chinaski. Okay. Oh, it looks like we have a SoundCloud. Usually he does.
You know what? It wasn't there last night when I loaded them, so I actually don't have that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Should I give it a read?
Yes. And I'm sorry, Chinaski, I did not notice that you added that today.
Okay. And in the midst of it all, tender trees billowing, floating freedom of her arms, as clubs are held against our necks, imagining azure blue of flowing seas. Only little droplets of bell petals falling off pages of interwoven visions, pulling you into my wandering world, suspended essence caught, bouncing between bouquets, taking you away from the moment, letting you drift as magical mannequins, strung by chains, locked lions, shaking you inside out, loop the loop, fluttering butterflies, escaping from cocoons, salted air, sultry stare, like an infinite beach, buoys buried by tides, shuffling feet, catching ship strides, delving into driftwood dreams, strange gods arrive, dropping ornaments, pretending to welcome wind blooming sails adrift, abandoned into liquid night, pirouetting dancers possessed, spectators obsessed with larger-than-life heroes who are printed on eggshell minds. Words become all-seeing gods, satisfying hunger, divine ominescence, preserved perfectly inside subtle symbols like rare exotic insects feeding on skull bone marrow, then to bottle it perfectly into frozen prose, cradled nest, an empty world under porcelain ribs, echoing voiceless seeds, feeding black muddied silk dress with stains, soil turning harvest fruits, midnight mist, sultry masks of disguise into the unknown. End poem.
This had some beautiful imagery. I liked only little droplets of bell petals falling off pages of interwoven visions. And the idea of pulling you into my wandering world. I really liked, where is it now? Pirouetting dancers possessed, spectators obsessed with larger-than-life heroes who are printed on eggshell minds. I like eggshell minds, very fragile, just wanting to have a hero to look up to, but feeling very vulnerable themselves. Feeding on skull bone marrow, then to bottle it perfectly into frozen prose. It's like you're letting your search for writing to kind of clear out your brain. You're hollowed out. It's taking the essence of you, but you're capturing it in such a way that you're putting it into these words that that will be frozen, preserved. I don't know, that's how I take it, but it's really interesting. And then the way it describes, like, the world under porcelain ribs, so that would be your heart that is cradled under your porcelain ribs, echoing voiceless seeds. It's such interesting use of language here. Sultry masks of disguise into the unknown. This is really cool, Cal. Chinaski's real name is Cal. This is really visual and yet metaphorical piece. And salted air, sultry stare. There's some rhyme in here that it's not consistent all the way through, but every once in a while it hits you, and it just makes you pay attention to certain parts. And what did you think about it?
Yeah, I thought it was great, and I liked kind of it giving the feeling as if you were prescribed meds, if a person wasn't knowing it was kind of about writing or poetry, you would almost feel like somebody kind of getting into the thralls of a medication and getting that feeling from it. And I like on here too, kind of how he put on here, to bottle it perfectly. I just kind of pictured the RX bottle. And so just to kind of tie into with the top with the meds, I thought it had fantastic pieces of being able to still somehow attach itself to that central theme throughout. So very well done by Chinaski. I hope that I read it decent. Sorry we couldn't get the sound cloud uploaded. So very well done, though.
I'd like to welcome Salwa to the show. Welcome.
Hey. Hello.
Hey, Salwa.
Hello, hello. How are you both?
Hey, doing well. How are you, Salwa?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for asking.
Oh, well, glad that you could call in. Did you have, by any chance, hear Cal's poem?
I read it, and there's a lot in this, layers and layers, taking you away from the moment, letting you drift as a magical mannequin strung by chain, locked lines. Oh, my goodness. Mannequin strung by chain, locked lines, shaking you inside out, loop the fluttering butterflies escaping from cocoons. So much, there's so much emotion, like beauty and its contrast to show atrocity, or could be depressant, could be what I'm really thinking about, what's happening today in the world, from wars to conflicts to depression even, that people have to get medicated or deal with this pain. It's amazing imagery, really rich all the way from the top to the end. And I like your commenting, both of you, on it. Amazing, really. Well done, Carl.
Thank you, Salwa. And since you're here, we have yours posted up if you would like to give that a read.
Sure. I can't remember even what I put. Sorry, give me one second. I was going to... It's slow, my computer. Sorry, let me do it on my phone. Been acting today. We had a lot of rain. Here you go. It's opening.
And feel free to read both versions if you'd like to read the French too.
Okay, thank you. And I don't know which quote reminded me of this one plant. I can't remember which quote, but I know one of the quotes will remind me of this poem. She wants to plant loveliness. Elle veut planter des fleurs. Elle veut planter des fleurs dans son âme pour danser, mais il faut cesser ses pleurs, il faut effacer ses douleurs, puis faire doucement tout oublier. Elle veut planter des fleurs, la joie dans son cœur revient toujours, demain ne cessera de chanter, les oiseaux l'éloigneront de ses pleurs, ses yeux sont mis clos, elle les laisse tendrement rêver. Elle veut planter des fleurs, elle ne veut plus de pleurs. She wants to plant loveliness in her soul, to dance gleefully, to dry up dew of her sadness. Time will erase her loneliness, will make her forget gently. She wants to plant loveliness. Her heart always returns joyless. Tomorrow, she'll not stop singing. Birds keep her away from sadness. Now her limpid eyes can see. She let them dream tenderly. She wants to plant loveliness, so there'll be no more sadness. And the poem, I have to say the French and English are different because of the rhyming of the Villanelle require ending and rhyming slightly different. But thank you for letting me read reading both.
Beautiful. absolutely beautiful.
It really is. I love hearing you speak French. It flows so beautifully. And I like both versions of the poem. You know, it's such skill to make something work in two languages, and you always blow me away with how well you do that. I'm mostly going to comment on the English one because my French is rusty, and not all of our audience will fully know French. I think that this is a beautiful poem with the rhymes that work just right. And where is it now? To dry up dew of her sadness. So the dew of her sadness is like the tears that are lingering. When I think of dew, it's like it's in the morning that it's all over the landscape. So to wake up crying is what I think there, like even crying in her sleep, to have that sadness that gets you right away. If you plant loveliness, if you put it out there, then you can, you know, make that connection to plant loveness. Tomorrow she will not stop singing. Birds keep her away from sadness. There's something about nature that helps you connect, and that the singing is there bringing joy does work really well with our quote, which was about how they're going to respond to hate with song and music to keep things going, and to blast love. So I think this fits really well with our quote. She wants to plant loveliness. There will not more sadness. To block out the bad feelings by creating something beautiful is exactly the goal. So I think this is wonderful, and I thank you so much for being here to read it, especially to hear it in both languages. And villanelles are tricky. I've meaning to play more with form. I tend to just kind of like stream of consciousness whatever I'm thinking. I it would be really nice for me to actually use some proper forms in my poetry. So you inspire me to do that.
Dexter, someone inspired me. Now I'm inspiring you. Thank you so much for amazing poet. I was just my first one, Villanelle. I've never done one. This is my first one ever. So maybe you'd be your first one ever too.
Yes, I think it might be. I may have done like one or two before, but it's been a long time, so it's like starting over.
Yeah, takes practice. That's true.
Mm-hmm. The Duke of St. Paul. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was beautiful, you know, and I also thought that it fit the image very well too, you know, the plants of loveliness and the, you know, the flowers as he's sitting there painting those flowers in all of that sadness, you know, in a way that could almost be like the dirt, you know, the dark brown dirt, and from what from out of that dirt comes these flowers, and her heart always returns, the birds keep her away from sadness, you know, this nature. And I think that that's what's, you know, reflected in that image also, is just that the flowers are what's repelling the whole image from being dark and gray. And so I just thought that this was a beautiful piece, and just lovely hearing you read it in both languages.
Oh, thank you so much, too. My pleasure.
Okay. And what we have next here, we have Elix Ader, and let's see here, I believe it is Faziana's turn to read.
you're right. This is Past the Hurricane by Elix Ader. Venomous words swirl around me, a hurricane of vitriol, looking for cracks in my armor, to poison my bones, destroying me from within. My hair flies past my face as I sit, safe for the moment, within the eye of humanity's storm, watching the war pass me by. Until the funnel narrows, trying to catch me in its treacherous claws, and I follow the only path left to walk, finding freedom in the waves. I stretch my arms up above my head, rise tall on battered toes, set my sights on a red horizon, and dance. Through the rain and clouds, in a perfect flawed expression of artistic liberation, telling the world who I am with every motion of limbs, swirling to the beat, drumming with my veins, that I am strong enough to persevere without a crutch of hatred, ignoring the calls to surrender, take the easy path, join the chorus of the miserable damned, never stopping until I free myself under my own banner, basking in a perfect rising forevermore.
Wow.
Salwa, would you like to start the comments?
Yes, this is a beautiful read, Tatiana, really amazing poem, so much emotion, starting with venomous words swirl around me, a hurricane of vitriol looking for crack in my armor. There's so much hate can be come from some different way, could be words, could be action itself, and he described how it's really, even his hair and his face and everything within the eye of humanity's storm, watching the war pass me. He put himself in this hurricane, like the war, seeing this atrocity of the war. But instead of hating all what's happening, it's really easy to hate for some people. But it also, I think, it's really easier to love than hate, what I'm trying to say. But people forget that, and they fall into the wrong place, unfortunately. Telling the world who I am with every emotion, he put so much emotion that I'm strong enough to perceive without a crutch of hatred, ignoring the calls to surrender. You can be strong, you can defend, but you don't have to hate. That's what the message I get from here. Just really you free yourself if you free yourself from hate. That's what I see here. An incredible, incredible ride. I mean, this is my first impression. I have to read it a couple of times to give it justice. But I'm blown up by the wording and the imagery, so strong and so powerful.
That was a wonderful comment. Thank you. And
pleasure.
You know, I feel the same. I think this is a wonderful poem. I like that it's to poison my bones, destroying me from within. So you know, poison generally is more of a surface thing, like maybe you'll touch it, maybe you'll drink it, but to poison the bones really goes deep. So that is those venomous words that eat you alive. The idea that hate is intended to tear you apart from the inside, and yet to be in the eye of the storm, to know that it's everywhere, and still try to capture that safe space. Swirling to the beat, drumming within my veins. There's such an intensity. Whenever I hear something like drumming within my veins, I think about like when you can hear your heartbeat in your ears, which always really freaks me out. That's kind of what I imagine there. And without a crutch of hatred, to not lean on that hatred, but to stand up without giving into that, without hate holding you up. I thought that was a really strong line. Dex, would you like to comment?
Yes. I believe that kind of in the eye of the storm, it is kind of a calm place. Obviously, it's not going to it's moving, especially in a hurricane. So it's not going to be calm for very long, but I believe that right in the dead center of it, it is kind of a calm place and one where it's like there's no, you know, there's clouds all over, but in there, I think if it was during the day, you could like look up and see the sun clearly. And, you know, and there might be rain clouds and raining all around and stuff. But I believe I could be wrong, but I believe right in the eye of the storm, right in the center, is kind of a calm place. And if you can, and I think that maybe with writing or with this person where they understand themselves and where they fall in line in life, there's a strength, a calming nature, even though it's chaos around, it's a calm thing to have found yourself and to know who you are, and that you're not going to, you know, without the crutch of hatred, and I'm not going to surrender. And I think that that's kind of a freeing place to be. And that's the one place where they can look up and still see the sun. So I thought that this was a very skilled rite, and I think that's how the metaphor is kind of being used. So very well done.
I agree, and you're right about the Eye of the Storm, which I basically only know because of the movie Perfect Storm with George Clooney a long time ago. my source of science knowledge, I don't know how accurate that is, but I remember him being in the Eye of the Storm.
You're so funny.
Well, that was just kind of like the poem we were reading earlier. What's Lindsay Lohan have to say about you? About the Ukraine and everything else. But anyway.
Here I am learning by George Clooney. Although he didn't do it. It was a story written by someone else. He just acted it.
I know. I'm joking. That's probably where I know it from, too. So, or Twister or something. But anyway, who just read that one? Did you?
I did.
Okay, so I'm up next on the read. And this next one is by S. Sharp, and it's called A Peaceful Summer. Darkness settles like the silt Darkness settles like the silt deposited from the haze over the Dnieper River. Everything crumbles, buildings, daylight, hopes, belief in the goodness of humanity. Smoke is dark above the flames, but an orange haze is illuminated by dusk at the edges where sunlight still peeks through. The calendar seems to turn the other cheek. I follow suit, carry on. I feel I cannot lose sight of everything. Like a tree in fall, I shed the leaves, disbelief, pain. I hold out hope for spring, when I will renew myself in new growth and hope for a peaceful summer. End poem.
This is fantastic. I really liked the way that it uses the seasons. The calendar seems to turn the other cheek. What a great line. That's so original. I've never heard something like that, so I love it. And then to be like the tree, just shedding everything, but shedding the bad things along with the hopes, the disbelief, the pain. And then when you've shed all of those bad feelings, you're just hoping that the new season will bring you to life again. I really love that metaphor. I think it's beautiful and full of hope, and it makes the fall, which people can see as kind of like the death of nature, what I love, would become a way of shedding what needs to be shed, and then starting over again, kind of like a snake sheds its skin and then ends up having a better one. I really enjoyed that. And the way that it talks about the things crumbling too. Like buildings you can see crumbling, but the idea of daylight crumbling is really fascinating to me. It makes sense, but I wouldn't have thought to use that word with it. So this is really wonderful. Salwa, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I love your commenting. Both of you is amazing. It's really great. I read a couple of his, it was just recently, his poetry, very powerful. Another, there's so many powerful poets, and it's amazing. I like how he starts with the darkness and settle like a from haze over in the river, like something, and you see all of so vividly everything, as you said, really got my attention, building daylight, even hope from the, when there's so much disaster, everything crumble, you don't have hope, you become, everything becomes dark, but then instead he believes in the goodness of humanity, because otherwise you stay in this darkness, you never get up again, and even though he sees this dark and haze illuminated by dusk and edge, there's sunlight. There's always, in darkness, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And that's what I see here. And I love what you said. I agree with you. The calendar seemed to turn the other cheek. That's very brilliant. And I follow suit. Carry on. It's just amazing. It's such a joy to read it. And then he end up with, as you said, after fall and after... you either stay there or, like a phoenix, you start all over again and wait for another season to grow and get better and stronger from this crumbling. Amazing, really amazing. Give hope for people who are in that situation. Hello? Did I lose you?
Sorry, I'm supposed to ask. I was expecting Dexter to jump in, but I'm supposed to ask him to. Dex!
Sorry.
Yeah, great comment. So I thought, you know, a peaceful summer, you know, there is really, when you kind of look at it, you know, when it says here it crumbles everything, buildings, daylight, hope, belief in the goodness of humanity. You know, I think that the seasons are such a strong metaphor because, and they're so important. I mean, obviously they're important, but they're the epitome of faith. You know, there, when you really look at it, there's not a whole lot of things that we know, or there's not a whole lot of things that they're really, you know, you can believe in, but we know that the seasons are going to change, right? We know that the summer is going to be this. And so I think that that is the core system that fuels our faith in everything else that can get better again, you know, because that's the truth that we've been shown through the seasons. And so I thought that this piece was very fittingly titled to be talking about the subject matter of it all. So very well done.
And
Faziana, could you give the next one by Peter a read?
Yes. Okay. Here we go. Balancing the Books by Peter Saleh. Godfather to pat his grandson's cheek, Adolf with pup, devil with god, trampoline to smile and scream, up then down, spectrum of rain to shine, but night of infinite universe, body to find in swamp, love in prison, Daniel in lion's den, tossing coins, clutching groin, poor Michael in innocent land, wings not working, police suggesting terrible things. But afterlife, a saga worse, heaven so boring, angels polite as Mormons, hell the candid opposite, whore with shaved head, wishing she was dead. Lone Blake to find a balance, I guess, center of the hiccuping universe. Life and death, Billie Jean knocking stars beyond destruction. Digits on a hand, count sesame certain, five not six, dear Winston. End poem. Well, you leave it to Peter to have so many references. He always does have a ton of references in here. So I see biblical things with Daniel and the lion and Michael the angel. We have Blake, who I think he's referring to the poet Blake. When it says Dear Winston, I was kind of expecting it to be Dear Watson for some reason, like Sherlock Holmes. Five, not six, Dear Winston. I'm actually not sure I get that one. Interesting use of contrast. I like the trampoline to smile and scream and up and down. That idea of how things change all the time and everything is an up and down. What goes up must come down. Laws of gravity. I like the heaven being too boring because everyone's so polite. I could see that. the extremes and how neither extreme feels quite right. This is fascinating. Peter always we can depend on him to be interesting and have so many references, and I have to, like, contemplate things. It's kind of like the irony of finding love in prison or, it's just awesome. I can always rely on him to have something interesting. Dexter, what are your thoughts?
I burst out at laughing at the love in prison line of balancing the books. This whole thing is just is perfect. It's the trampoline to smile and scream, up then down, spectrum of rain to shine, devil with God, love in prison. It's just police suggesting terrible things. Yeah, this whole thing is just set up on the contrast. And once again, though, it's coming to that central theme of the world and God or the universe or whoever it is out there finds a way to balance the books. And I think that ties in with the picture because when things get too dark, something, someone, somehow, somebody finds a way to make it, to balance it and bring some light into it. So very well done by Peter and bringing some light to the end of this show.
Yes, I agree. Dexter, do you have a contest for next show ready?
Well, Sawa still got a comment on this one.
Oh, you're right. When you said end the show, I just kind of went. Oh, clearly my brain is done. Sawa, what did you think?
It's really interesting, right? You're right. I mean, the one about the love in prison made me laugh. It's hilarious. So surrealistic. Like, it takes you in a world where nothing, everything is the opposite of everything. It's so amazing, so brilliant to come up with such a hiccuping universe, life and death. But I agree with all your comments. You said it so beautifully. It's just an amazing ride, balancing the books. Yeah, we have to balance the books. Otherwise, everything doesn't fit. Like this, nothing fits anymore. It's really amazing. Very, very, very brilliant.
Thank you, Sawa.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us. I think that we had a great night of poetry. I do not have a contest posted up yet. We will have a contest here coming up. And Pam will help out a little bit too as well. We're going to do some autism awareness for Autism Awareness Month. And so we will have a contest here coming up shortly that I will have posted, but I don't have it together quite yet. So stay tuned for that. Faziana, do you have anything to add?
I was happy with everyone's poems. It was a nice variety. You know, even though for the most part everyone stayed on topic, I think that there was so many different sides of things, you know, not conflicting with each other, but just different perspectives. And I love when one prompt can create such diversity of responses. It really shows how people interpret things and how our own lives influence things. And I mean, that's, this show is supposed to be about how the poetry represents ourselves. And I think that you see the differences in the poems on the same subject and learn about the poets and their style and themselves. So I love that. I did have a second contest, which was quotes from Game of Thrones, specifically the character Tyrion. So that contest didn't have a whole lot of rights, and it's going to become like kind of a balancing act of we'll do a couple of them scattered about. We did two last week. Potentially, actually, we still have 10 minutes. We could do one of those tonight.
Yeah.
So I haven't forgotten about that contest. It's just it wasn't enough to make a whole show. So those poems will be acknowledged, and I will judge that soon. So thank you. What do you think, Dex? Do we have time to do one of those?
Yeah, let's do one of them.
All right. I added them to the board. Where are they? Here we go. Okay. Oh, now I've lost the board. Here. So this is by G.A. Grimm. And I guess I'll give that a read. This was to the quote, "Perhaps that is the secret. It's not what we do so much as why we do it." My Source of Strength by G.A. Grimm. You needed me to be strong and stoic. Therefore, I have become. I will always be your rock, that thing you can hold on to, and weather whatever hell heaven brings, the place you can call home, where you can take a reprieve from the harshness of your world. I see how much you suffer, how your anxiety multiplies all obstacles, always giving that extra to ordinary. So please lean on me. Let my love be a balm for your hurts, my presence a reassurance that you need not fight this battle alone. Allow me to take up your banner, to defy this reality with you. Trust I will not falter. I will not flinch, because your belief is my armor, your happiness, my reason." End poem. And Salwa, would you like to comment? Sorry, we lost Salwa. We did. It says that she dropped. So, Dexter, will you start us off, please?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. It says, "You needed me to be strong and stoic, therefore I become, and I will always be your rock." Awesome metaphor used right off, and then also used throughout, but let my love be your balm for your hurts, my presence a reassurance. Just a very tender right. And very, you know, the title says it all, My Source of Strength. It's just a poem that's awesome, just captures and embodies, you know, what it is to be strength. And it uses all the appropriate metaphors and symbolism or the, in, you know, the symbolic nature of what strength is woven throughout. So very well done by G.A. Grimm.
I really liked the line, "How your anxiety multiplies all obstacles." And that's true. Sometimes our fear of something ends up making it a bigger problem than it would have been. It makes me think about how I have really bad balance because of my brain injury. And what I was always falling over to the left. And then I was talking to my physiotherapist, and we realized I feel like I'm falling to the right. So I overcompensate, and I lean the other way because I'm trying to stop myself from falling, and that's why I fall. So it just makes me think about that, how sometimes being afraid of falling is the reason that you fall, and that works on a metaphorical level of, you know, if you're afraid to go do something, then you're all flustered when you're doing it, and it becomes a bigger deal. It's sort of like how you always get, like, your coat stuck on something or something when you're really mad and you're like storming out. It doesn't happen when you're in a good mood. So it always seems like, oh, now it's doing this. It's because you are upset that it's happening. And it's the same thing with fear. So to have this person who's willing to be your calming energy, to be there for you, lets you take away some of that anxiety that becomes your obstacle. So I think that's a really beautiful thing.
I agree. I agree 100%. You know, and like I'm terrified of heights, so I know what you mean. You know, I think if I got up high enough and I didn't have something to hold, you know, or if I wasn't strapped in or something, I guarantee that I would get so scared that I would just fall right off the top of something. So I know exactly what you mean. So I thought that was a very good way of putting it. But I think that does bring us to basically out of time here. I know that Pam's got another show that she's got coming up here. Stay tuned for in a half hour, right? Pam has got Break On Through to the Other Side, I believe, is tonight, correct?
I think so, because next week is Into Darkness, and they alternate.
Okay,
yes.
so Break On Through to the Other Side. And then we also, then tomorrow night, we got Fill My Eyes and Laurent with Open Poetry for Friday night. And then you also have your show, Part Sinner, Part Saint. What do you have a contest for that, Faziana?
I do. So for Part Sinner, Part Saint, our theme this week is, I'm trying to say it correctly. I had it open and then I closed it by mistake. So it's about inner transformations. And I found this sculpture that is, it's a clay little girl, but then a crystal little girl comes out of it. And it's kind of like her ghostly spirit coming out of her body. But it's not that she died. It's like she's transforming. She's woken up and realized her true self. It's about having, like, the soul within. So the theme is inner transformations, and about how we can change many times during our life. And I wanted to hear about times that people have woken up to find themselves a different person based on things that have happened or their perspective changing. So I'm
awesome.
Excited to see what people came up with for that.
Yeah,
and we are
like
out of
fantastic
time.
Yeah, sounds like a great show, great prompt. But, yeah, so thank you to everybody. Thank you, Sawa, for calling in. And, do you have any closing remarks?
Oh, thanks, Dexter. You're awesome, as always. Thank you, Phil, for giving us this time slot on Late Night Poets. And I hope everyone will continue to write for our contest. We appreciate you. Good night.
Yeah. Night.